Then Bohm calculated. He predicted that the comet would return upon August 2, 1858. There was no comet. The astronomers went on calculating. They predicted that the comet would return upon August 22, 1860. No comet. But I think that a touch of mercy is a luxury that we can afford, anyway, we'll have to be merciful or monotonous. For variety we shall switch from a comet that did not appear to one that did appear. Upon the night of June 30, 1861, a magnificent humiliator appeared in the heavens. One of the most brilliant luminosities of modern times appeared as suddenly as if it had dropped through the shell of our solar system, if it be a solar system. There were letters in the newspapers, correspondents wanted to know why this extraordinary object had not been seen coming, by astronomers. Mr. Hind explained. He wrote that the comet was a small object, and consequently had not been seen coming by astronomers. No one could deny the magnificence of the comet, nevertheless Mr. Hind declared that it was very small, looking so large because it was near this Earth. This is not the later explanation. Nowadays it is said that the comet had been in southern skies, where it had been observed. All contemporaneous astronomers agreed that the comet had come down from the north, and not one of them thought of explaining that it had been invisible because it had been in the south. A luminosity, with a mist around it, altogether the apparent size of the moon, had burst into view. In Recreative Science, 3-143, Webb says that nothing like it had been seen since the year 1680. Nevertheless, the orthodox pronouncement was that the object was small and would fade away as quickly as it had appeared. See the Athenaeum, July 6, 1861. So small an object will soon get beyond our view. Hind. Popular Science Review, 1-513. That, in April, 1862, the thing was still visible. Something else that was seen under circumstances that cannot be considered triumphant: upon November 28, 1872, Professor Klinkerfues, of Göttingen, looking for Biela's comet, saw meteors in the path of the expected comet. He telegraphed to Pogson, of Madras, to look near the star Theta Centauri, and he would see the comet. I'd not say that this was in the field of magic, but it does seem consummate. A dramatic telegram like this electrifies the faithful. An astronomer in the north telling an astronomer far in the south where to look, so definitely naming one special little star in skies invisible in the north. Pogson looked where he was told to look and announced that he saw what he was told to see. But at meetings of the RAS, January 10 and March 14, 1873, Captain Tupman pointed out that, even if Biela's comet had appeared, it would have been nowhere near the star. Among our later emotions will be indignation against all astronomers who say that they know whether stars are approaching or receding. When we arrive at that subject, it will be the preciseness of the astronomers that will perhaps inflame us beyond endurance. We note here the far smaller difficulty of determining whether a relatively nearby comet is coming or going. Upon November 6, 1892, Edwin Holmes discovered a comet. In the Jour BAA, 3-182, Holmes writes that different astronomers had calculated its distance from 20 million miles to 200 million miles, and had determined its diameter to be all the way from 27,000 miles to 300,000 miles. Professor Young said that the comet was approaching. Professor Parkhurst wrote merely that the impression was that the comet was approaching the Earth, but Professor Berberich, E.N.G. Mech, 56-316, announced that, upon November 6, Holmes' comet had been 36 million miles from this Earth, and 6 million miles away upon the 16th, and that the approach was so rapid that upon the 21st the comet would touch this Earth. The comet, which had been receding, kept on receding. 4. Nevertheless, I sometimes doubt that astronomers represent a special incompetence. They remind me too much of uplifters and grocers, philanthropists, expert accountants, makers of treaties, characters in international conferences, psychic researchers, biologists. The astronomers seem to me about as capitalists seem to socialists, and about as socialists seem to capitalists, or about as Presbyterians seem to Baptists, as Democrats seem to Republicans, or as artists of one school seem to artists of another school. If the basic fallacies, or the absence of base, in every specialization of thought can be seen by the units of its opposition, why then we see that all supposed foundations in our whole existence are myths, and that all discussion and supposed progress are the conflicts of phantoms and the overthrow of old delusions by new delusions. Nevertheless, I am searching for some wider expression that will rationalize all of us conceiving that what we call irrationality is our view of parts and functions out of relation to an underlying whole, an underlying something that is working out its development in terms of planets and acids and bugs, rivers and labor unions and cyclones, politicians and islands and astronomers. Perhaps we conceive of an underlying nexus in which all things, in our existence, are different manifestations torn by its hurricanes and quaked by the struggles of labor against capital and then, for the sake of balance, requiring relaxations. It has its rougher hoaxes, and some of the apes and some of the priests and philosophers and warthogs are nothing short of horseplay, but the astronomers are the ironies of its less peasant-like moments or the deliciousness of pretending to know whether a faraway star is approaching or receding, and at the same time exactly predicting when a nearby comet, which is receding, will complete its approach. This is cosmic playfulness. Such pleasantries enable existence to bear its catastrophes. Shattered comets and sickened nations and the hydrogenic anguishes of the sun, and there must be astronomers for the sake of relaxations. It will be important to us that the astronomers shall not be less unfortunate in their pronouncements upon motions of the stars than they have turned out to be in other respects. Especially disagreeable to us is the doctrine that stars are variable because dark companies revolve around them. Also, we prefer to find that nothing fit for somewhat matured minds has been determined as to stars with light companions that encircle them, or revolve with them. If silence be the only true philosophy, and if every positive assertion be a myth, we should easily find requital for our negative preferences. Professor Otto Struve was one of the highest of astronomic authorities, and the faithful attribute triumphs to him. Upon March 19, 1873, Professor Struve announced that he had discovered a companion to the star Procyon. That was an interesting observation, but the mere observation was not the triumph. Sometime before, Professor Ahlers, as credulous, if not jocular, as Newton and Leverrier and Adams, had computed the orbit of a hypothetic companion of Procyon's. Upon a chart of the stars, he had drawn a circle around Procyon. This orbit was calculated in gravitational terms, and a general theme of ours is that all such calculations are only ideal, and relate no more to stars and planets or anything else than do the spotless theories of uplifters to events that occur as spots in the one wide daub of existence. Specifically, we wish to discredit this triumph of Struve's and Ahlers, but in general we continue our expression that all uses of the calculus of celestial mechanics are false applications, and that this subject is for aesthetic enjoyment only, and has no place in the science of astronomy, if anybody can think that there is such a science. So, after great labor, or after considerable enjoyment, Ahlers drew a circle around Procyon, and announced that that was the orbit of a companion star. Exactly at the point in this circle where it should be, upon March 19, 1873, Struve saw the point of light which, it may be accepted, sooner or later someone would see. According to Agnes Clerke, System of the Stars, p. 173, over and over Struve watched the point of light, and convinced himself that it moved as it should move, exactly in the calculated orbit. In Reminiscences of an Astronomer, p. 138, Professor Newcomb tells the story. According to him, an American astronomer then did more than confirm Struve's observations. He not only saw but exactly measured the supposed companion. A defect was found between the lenses of Struve's telescope. It was found that this telescope showed a similar companion, about 1/0 from every large star. It was found that the more than confirmatory determinations by the American astronomer had been upon a long well-known star. Newcomb. Every astronomic triumph is a bright light accompanied by an imbecility, which may for a while make it variable with diminishments, and then be unnoticed. Priestcrafts are not merely tyrannies, they're necessities. There must be more reassuring ways of telling this story. The good priest J. Igor, Studies in Astronomy, p. 104, tells it safely not a thing except that, in the year 1873, a companion of Procyon's was, by Struve, strongly suspected. Positive assurances of the sciences, they are islands of seeming stability in a cosmic jelly. We shall eclipse the story of Algol with some modern disclosures. In all minds not convinced that earnest and devoted falsifiers are holding back development, the story, if remembered at all, will soon renew its fictitious luster. We are centers of tremors in a quaking black jelly. A bright and shining delusion looks like beacon security. Sir Robert Ball, in The Story of the Heavens, says that the period in which Algol blinks his magnitudes is 2 days, 20 hours, 48 minutes, and 55 seconds. He gives the details of Professor Vogel's calculations upon a speck of light and an invisibility. It is a godlike command that out of the variations of light shall come the diameters of faint appearances and the distance and velocity of the unseeable, that the diameter of the point of light is 1,054,000 miles, and that the diameter of the imperceptibility is 825,000 miles, and that their centers are 3,220,000 miles apart. Orbital velocity of Algol, 26 miles a second, and the orbital velocity of the companion, 55 miles a second, should be stated 26.3 miles and 55.4 miles a second, Proctor. Old and New Astronomy, p. 773.